Good morning. We're going to start in Psalm 39 because before we actually get into the lesson, I want to remind us of something. Psalm 39, and I'm going to start reading in verse 4. Lord, make me to know my end, and what is the measure of my days, that I may know how frail I am. Indeed, you have made my days as handbreadths, and my age is as nothing before you. Certainly every man at his best state is but a vapor. Surely every man walks about like a shadow. Surely they busy themselves in vain. He heaps up riches and does not know who will gather them. This is something we need to remember, that man is frail and life is short. Man is frail, and his life is short. I'm going to do something here real quick. Suddenly realized that I can't tell if my screen comes up like it's supposed to or not, so I'm going to put my computer up there so I can see. Man is frail, and his life is short. Now, this is something we should know. This is something we should understand. The older we get, the more this becomes a reality. But I just wanted to remind us of that. Okay? I want to remind us of that. And now I want to go to Matthew chapter 24. Matthew chapter 24, starting with verse 36. But of that day and hour, no one, not even the angels of heaven, know but my Father only. He's talking about his second coming, when he's going to come again later. Verse 37, but as the days of Noah were, so also will the coming of the Son of Man be. For in the days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage until that day that Noah entered the ark, and did not know until the flood came and took them all away. So also will the coming of the Son of Man be. Then two men will be in the field, one will be taken, the other left. Two women will be grinding at the mill, one will be taken, the other left. Watch therefore, for you do not know what hour your Lord is coming. But know this, that if the master of the house had known what hour the thief would come, he would have watched and not allowed his house to be broken into. Therefore, you also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect. Now, this is an interesting passage of Scripture because Jesus, when talking about his own coming, calls their memory back to the flood. Okay, calls their memory back to the flood. And he says, you know, in the days of Noah, life was continuing. Life went on like it always had been. There were people that got up that morning and planned on or went to work. There was probably a wedding going to take place someplace in the world. There was probably a funeral to attend to. There were probably people that got up and took care of their children, assuming that they were going to take care of their children for several years, and then they were going to have their own life. Things continued as they always had. Until it started raining. And then everything changed. In an instant, the fountains of the deep broke out, the waters of the heavens came down, and that was it. Everything had continued. In fact, it's so detailed that he says, two men, that this is how it will be when the Son of Man comes the second time. Just the same. Everybody's going to be going along just as if everything was going. Two men are going to be in the field. They're going to be at work. One's going to be taken and the other left. In the blink of an eye, in an instant. Two women grinding at the mill. One's going to be taken and another left. Now, this is probably, there's those of you that follow such things, there is a whole religious philosophy that is basically based off of these two verses, I think a misunderstanding of what God is trying to say. That word left, most people try to put a second word Oh, I like that. Some people, you think of things. Some people try to put a second word behind that, left behind. Left behind. But that's not the word that God uses. He doesn't use a Greek word that means left behind. He uses the Greek word, and please do not quote me on the pronunciations of these, aphemi, which doesn't mean left behind. It means to send away, to give up a thing, to leave, or to go away from. More accurately, it would mean to be left out. It's not left behind, it's left out. One person will be taken, accepted, and another will be sent away or left out. That's what God is trying to say. That's what He is explaining to us. That everything will be going on just as it always had, and then in a sudden instant, one will be taken and the other left out. The other sent away. Now I want us to go to the passage that was read just a little bit ago, in 2 Peter chapter 3. Because this is where the rest of my lesson is going to be based off of and come from. Because I want us to spend some time analyzing and thinking about some of the concepts that are here in 2 Peter chapter 3. Since we read it, I'm not going to read through the whole thing. But we are going to hit a couple of important points. One of the first important points I want us to point out is that he says there's going to come a day when there will be people that say, since things have always continued as they are, they will always continue as they are. Who did we just talk about that had that mindset? The people in the days of Noah. They had that same mindset. They went to work. They got up. They took care of their children. They went to the wedding. They did everything they'd always done every day as long as they'd been alive, thinking that everything would continue. And he says there's going to be people that will eventually have that same mindset again. Because things have always continued as they have, they will always continue. And then he immediately brings up Noah and the flood, doesn't he? Because that's what he says. We need to remember it, because the people that have that mindset intentionally or willfully forget it. They choose not to remember it. They choose not to think about it. They choose not to consider it. Instead, they laugh at things. They scoff. They assume. And in verse 7, he says, just like the world was held in its day during the days of Noah and was released to the flood, so the whole world now is being held and protected in the same way, but reserved for fire by what means? Or reserved for judgment by fire. I was going to ask by what means, but I already answered it. By fire. It's different. But it's kind of the same. It's different, but it's kind of the same. Now, he goes in verse 8. He says another thing that I think is interesting. Because 1,000 years with the Lord is one day, and one day is like 1,000 years. And some people say, well, see, that's talking about how God keeps time. No, that's not what he's talking about. He's talking about how God keeps promises. That's what he's talking about. How God plans things out. And the idea is that it doesn't matter to God if he promises something and in an hour fulfills that promise, or in 1,000 years fulfills that promise. It doesn't make any difference. God still will fulfill the promise. That's the point he's trying to make. Because he's talked about those people that think, well, I know God promised he was going to destroy the world by fire, but it hasn't happened yet, therefore it won't. Those people are forgetting something. They're forgetting something. Instead, in verse 9, he says, the Lord is not slack concerning his promises. I'll just let you read the word for yourself. There's the Greek word for that is used for slacken. It means to delay or to be slow. He doesn't promise something. Have you ever promised something and then tried to figure out how you wouldn't have to follow through with that promise? Or tried to put it off because it wasn't going to be fun or pleasant? That's not how God is. He isn't slack that way like some men count slackness. Instead, He's faithful to fulfill His promises. He will fulfill His promises. And He reminds us then in verse 10 that the day of the Lord will come like a thief in the night. Suddenly, without realizing it, without planning it ahead for us, we won't know when things are going to happen. And this verse 10 has always been fascinating to me. I want to read it. But the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in which the heavens will pass away with a great noise, and the elements will melt with fervent heat. Both the earth and the works that are in it will be burned up. And I want to spend some time on this. I enjoy science. I like science. I'm not a scientist, but I find it fascinating. And as I've looked at things, there are people out there that will try to convince us that science disproves the Bible. When in my research, in my looking into these types of things, what I find is that science actually proves the things the Bible are saying, and that the Bible confirms the things we find in the scientific world. They seem to be compatible to me. And this is one of those passages that people will go to and talk about. And I want to talk about it a little bit today. That word, when he says that the heavens will pass away with a great noise and the elements will melt with a fervent heat, I want to talk about that just a little bit. The word he uses for elements there is very similar to what we would use for the idea of elements, but it's actually even more basic than that, because that word indicates any first thing of a series or anything of a composite whole. Stoichiōn. Okay? Now, just think about this for a second. If in Greek you were to ask somebody for the recipe on how to make a certain kind of cake or cookie, they would tell you, they wouldn't say, well, here's the ingredients. They would say, well, here is the stoichiōn. That's the word they would use. The very basic components of what you need to comprise that. And what God is telling us is that the very basic components of what everything is made up of are going to melt. Now, when we think of the word melt, we think of maybe an ice cube turning into water. Okay? We call that melting. But again, that's not exactly the word that he uses. He uses a word that means it will be unbound or loosed or set free. Okay? Now, the reason that is interesting is because when you melt a cube of ice into water, it changes the power or the strength of the bonds between the molecules, but it doesn't really, in the sense of this word, melt it. Because melting that would be to release or set free. Now, this podium, right, is made up of atoms. We're going to hit science class for a little bit. It's made up of atoms. Here's a typical depiction of an atom, all right? You've got your protons and neutrons in the center making up the nucleus, and you've got your electrons flying all around it. And one of the interesting things about an atom is that atoms are 99.9999% empty space, air. Just completely empty space. There's nothing there. It's not, you can't even call it air because it's smaller than air. It is just empty space. Okay? Now, if that's true, if 99.999% of atoms are empty space and this is made up of atoms, then why can't I put my hand through it? Because those atoms are so close together and they're so small. That empty space is so minute. And my hand is so much bigger than the empty space that I can't put my hand through it. Now, water, I can put my hand, if I had a glass of water here, I could put my hand through the water. But that's because the bonds with this are stronger than the bonds with the water. And my hand can infiltrate that. It can permeate that and pierce it. Now, these atoms, this will tell you how things have changed a little bit. These atoms, when I was in school, we were taught that atoms were made up of three things. They were made up of, electrons, protons, and neutrons, right? And there was a hint at some things that were going on that perhaps there was something smaller, but they hadn't exactly identified it. Now they have decided that there are things inside the protons and the neutrons called quarks. Quarks, as far as an invention, are about as old as I am because they were discovered the same year I was born. I just find that interesting. Nobody else probably does. But these quarks make up the protons and the neutrons. And we won't go into a lot of detail on this, but if you're interested and you want to look it up sometime, protons are two up quarks and one down quark. And neutrons are one down quark and two up quarks. They're opposites. That's just for fun. Electrons, though, they can't find anything that makes up electrons. They think it is the most basic elemental concept within there. Okay? So you have it's the lowest component. Now, in nature, there are four major forces that combine everything and hold stuff together in nature. Some of them you're going to be very familiar with, and some of them maybe you haven't. Gravity. Gravity is one of the main forces in nature. Gravity is what holds big things together. All right? It keeps our planet from flying away from the sun, and it keeps us from floating away off the planet. Right? We all know that because we've all fallen down the stairs or had something hit us on the head. We know what gravity is. Another major force that they've discovered is electromagnetism. Now, electromagnetism holds atoms together. Okay, that's what keeps this podium from falling apart as far as molecularly. Then there's two others. There's what they call a weak nuclear force, and a weak nuclear force holds individual particles together. Okay? Individual particles. For example, the weak nuclear force is what keeps an electron from spinning off into space. They call that nuclear decay. It keeps it from spinning off into space. And then there is something called a strong nuclear force. The strong nuclear force is what holds that nucleus together, the protons and neutrons. Everybody completely bored yet? Okay? This is what science has discovered. You may have heard of something that has come out and been theorized recently called the Higgs-boson theory. Higgs is a person's name. Boson is a kind of particle. Higgs-boson theory, it's sometimes referred to as the God particle. What they believe this is some sort of either particle or force. It may be a fifth force in nature. They haven't figured it out yet. But they think that it is a universal magnetic field that gives particles the appearance of mass. Mass is how heavy something is or how much it weighs. Okay? Now, all of that was to point this out. Okay? You have all of this stuff going on in all these atoms. It's what you're made up of. It's what the table's made up of. Everything you can see or touch or taste or feel, it's all made up of atoms. All right? There is an interesting theory called the conservation of mass. How many have heard of this before? It's a very important theory, okay? The conservation of mass, and if you were to look it up in a science book, here's what it would say. For any system closed to all transfers of matter and energy, the mass of the system must remain constant over time, as system mass cannot change quantity if it is not added or removed. Hence, the quantity of mass is conserved over time. Everybody got that? That's why most people gave up on science. Here's what it means. Matter cannot be created or destroyed. Can't happen. I can take that ice cube and I can melt it, but I still have the same number of particles. I still have the same number of protons and neutrons and electrons. They're spread out. If I take a piece of wood and I burn it, well, the wood's gone, right? No, the wood's not gone. It's changed. It's been morphed into other things. It's been turned into vapor and smoke and heat that go off. It's been turned into ash that's sitting in the bottom of your fireplace that you now have to clean out, right? It's the same amount of electrons, protons, and neutrons. None of that has changed. This conservation theory says no matter what you do to something, you cannot add or subtract the number of protons, neutrons, and electrons that are currently in the universe and have always been there. It can't change. You can change the form. You can release energy. You cannot change that number. It's always the same. Now, that's pretty important because what that tells us is that over the process of the 6,000 some years since the world was created, it's all that part has all stayed exactly the same. Through the flood, through birth, through death, through burning things up, through destroying stuff, no matter what we try to do in this universe, we cannot add or subtract the amount of matter that is currently there. It's always stayed the same. Now, the reason that is important is because of this philosophy right here. Here is a uranium-235 atom that is being split apart. What they do is they have a single atom. They have a single atom. They take a single neutron with a lot of force, throw it into the middle of the atom. That atom splits. It's not destroyed. It's simply changed. Instead of U-235, it's now U-236. And that splits up into krypton-92 and barium-141. Remember your basic science classes now? Chemistry? I hated chemistry, by the way. Didn't do well in it at all. I find it interesting, but I didn't do well for whatever reason. Probably I didn't study. That is one atom being split apart. Now I ask you, what is the common term we use for that process? Fission. That is nuclear fission. Okay? That is one atom. When you take about a softball size amount of that uranium-235 and you inject a neutron into it, notice that when it goes, splits apart, there are three neutrons that are released. If you have a whole big ball of that, about a softball-sized piece of that, clump of it, and you are able to get one neutron to split one of those uranium-235 atoms, and it splits apart, three neutrons come out at high speed, they hit others, they split apart, what do we call that? A nuclear bomb. Now, the reason I bring that up is I want you to think about this. This is one atom being split apart. Nothing is destroyed. It is simply changed. And we get that much energy out of a softball-sized chunk of it when that happens. Now, think about, for a second, our sun. I have to read these statistics because I don't have them memorized. Our sun is about 74% hydrogen, 25% helium, and the rest is just a whole bunch of little stuff. Okay? We talked about fission. This is fusion, so don't confuse the two. I'm not going to go into a lot of details about what it is, but this sun is very, very big. Did you know that? If you were to line up Earth side by side, it would be about 109 Earths across the sun. If you were to try to fill up the sun with Earths, you would need about 1.3 million Earths to fill it up. It's huge. And it burns at about 11,000 degrees Fahrenheit. It's hot. But guess what? Nothing is destroyed. after 6,000 years of burning, the same amount of mass is there as was there before. The same amount of material is there as was there before. None of that has changed. We could never come even close to the sun because of how hot it is and how much gravitational pull there is. But yet God says the elements will melt with a fervent heat. Considering all this, I want you to think. What do you think will happen when God releases all of these forces that are holding the neutrons and the protons and the electrons and the quarks and all of that? What's going to happen when God releases all of those forces from all of the atoms in the entire universe? We know the devastation and destruction that can come from splitting apart a softball-sized piece of material. What's going to happen when God is holding all of this stuff together and He doesn't melt it the way we think of melting? He simply lets go. Not only will there not be any matter, there won't be any protons or neutrons, so there can't be any nucleuses. There won't be any atoms. There won't be any matter. This, I think, is what God is telling us when He says that the elements, the very basic building blocks of the universe, will be dissolved, let go. All of those forces in between, gone. What will that be like? I would say that that will probably be with a loud noise and a fervent heat. And that's probably an understatement. It's all going to happen in the blink of an eye, right? Everybody's going to be going along like everything was always has been. Going about their day, planning out their week, planning out their month, planning out their year, planning what they're going to have for breakfast, pouring the milk on their cereal. And God's just going to let go. That could be pretty depressing, couldn't it? Except that Peter doesn't leave it there, does he? Peter doesn't end with the destruction of the world. In verse 10, "But the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in which the heavens will pass away with a great noise. The elements will melt with a fervent heat. Both the earth and the works that are in it will be burned up, destroyed." But he keeps going. "Therefore, since all these things will be dissolved, what manner of persons ought you to be in holy conduct and godliness, looking for and hastening the coming of the day of God, because of which the elements will be dissolved and being on fire, and the elements will melt with a fervent heat? Nevertheless, according to His promise, look for a new heavens and a new earth in which righteousness dwells." We shouldn't be afraid of this happening. We should be looking forward to it. We're told that the whole creation groans, waiting for the day when everything is released. We should look forward to it. Because in that day, not only will everything we know be destroyed, including, by the way, these bodies we're sitting in, they're made up of electrons and neutrons and protons. Not only will all of this be destroyed, but there will be something new come. New. There will be no more matter. So it's not made out of atoms. It's not made out of electrons, protons, and neutrons. It is something completely different. And it will come. And He says that we should look forward to it because He's promised it. Don't get caught up in because it's not happened yet, it will never happen. That's what the people of the flood believed. Don't get caught up in that thought process. Don't get caught up in the thought process with maybe, well, God has changed his mind and he's not actually going to do it. Because God is not slack in his promises, as some count slackness. If he promises, it will happen. Instead, look forward to it because it will be new, it will be different, it will be pure. It will be where righteousness dwells. That's a message of hope at the end. I don't think science contradicts the Bible. I think God right there in 2 Peter chapter 3 was trying to help us understand how all this would take place. How the very basic building blocks of the world are held together by God. And one day, he will just let go. And we have to be ready. Because our life is like a vapor. We never know. We never know when the thief will come. If you're not ready, you will be one of the two people that are standing there going about your business. One will be taken and the other will be rejected and left out. The only way to make sure that you are the one of the ones that is accepted is to believe what he's told us, accept his promises as true and faithful, and to accept his Son as the Son of God that came, like we celebrated a little bit ago, that came to forgive the world of its sins. So that when that destruction takes place, we have something better. We have something better to look forward to. If today is the day of your salvation, if you're ready to accept him in full faith and through baptism, have your sins washed away, then we invite you to come as we stand and as we sing.